welcome. This is the Ted Brewer Show. This is October the 18th, 2015. We've got some interesting information to cover with you a lot tonight, a lot of health-breaking stories that we're going to cover with you about how vaccine experiments are actually being done on children in utero in the womb and why the government's allowing it to happen. And we're going to go into detail on what not to do as far as when you're pregnant, as far as vaccinations. We're going to talk more about health. We're going to talk about the epidemic of obesity in the United States and what we can do about that. But I kind of have a heavy heart tonight because I need to talk to you about something that's been actually quite awful this week. And I just kind of give you a little bit of background on it. My wife, her dad was a full-bird colonel in the United States military. And he and his and my wife's mom got divorced when they were in their 30s. And Sharon basically gravitated towards her mom's side. Her dad remarried a woman much younger, and they had another child when he was pushing 50. And what ended up happening is he became enamored by this child. His name was Todd. And Todd basically ended up being in a situation where he was the only child, very, very intelligent, super high IQ. And when he was 8 years old, we were going and visiting them all the time. About the age of eight, Austin was born. I think Austin was like a year old when Todd was eight. That's my oldest son. He's on with me right now. He's listening to the conversation. Austin, you can chime in anytime you want.
Yeah, I'm here. I didn't get a proper introduction, but I am on the show tonight.
Thanks, Austin. And everybody will know why I'm not on point right now when I get done with the story in about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And when he was about 8 years old, he had gained about 50 pounds, Todd had. And I went to his dad and I said, you know, I really want to help you guys because this is what I do for a living. And I really want to be able to just, you know, help him with his diet. Because, you know, at 50 pounds overweight when you're 8 years old, you're going to be in a situation that you're going to be basically ostracized by your peer group when you start getting into junior high school and higher parts of elementary school. And kids are really, really cruel with little kids that are overweight. I was about 20 pounds overweight when I was a kid. And I remember the abuse I took for being 20 pounds, not 50 pounds overweight, but they got really angry at me because Todd was the light of their life. It was the only child for the mother. It was my dad, my father-in-law's second child other than my wife. And Todd basically was the joy, the apple of his eye. And if you look at a triangular type of relationship there, he was the facilitator or the enabler, the father was, the colonel. The accuser was me. I'm accusing this little boy of being 50 pounds overweight. And the victim is Todd. And so that's how the triangle works. And so by the time the kid was 13 years old, we went back over to see him again. And when I offered, but this is interesting. I want to share this with you. We were going to a pretty active church at that time when Todd was eight. I even asked the father-in-law, Stan, I said, if you'd like, I can take this child for the summer. And I can let him hang out with Austin, who's a baby, and we'll help him get his weight under control, get him on a good exercise program. We'll bring him back 20 or 30 pounds lighter, and he'll feel a lot better about himself. And Stan said, absolutely not. You guys go to one of those crazy churches. We're Lutherans, and you can't go. I don't want him going to a crazy church. You know, I think, you know, Southern Baptist is where we were going. And I said, whatever. And so what ended up happening is we ended up waiting about 4 or 5 years, and then we went back over. And the next time we saw Todd, he was 13 years old. And what was interesting about this is Todd was about 300 pounds. And by now he was huge. He was just massively obese. He basically had green hair. He was hanging out with the other kids, the theater kids in school, who basically had no friends either. So they all kind of, you know, congealed together. And those of you in high school remember those days when the kids that are kind of outcasts kind of all hung out together. I'm not saying the theater kids are bad because a lot of the theater kids are good. But he was hanging out with the outcast. You know, and he was wearing the green hair. And I told Stan, I said, I really would like to help him to get into a private Christian school if we could. And Stan's response to me was basically, you know, Vero Beach High School was fine for me. Therefore, it has to be fine for my son. And I said, okay, whatever. And so that was about when he was 13 years old. Well, by the time he's about 18 years old, I went over there with Sharon again one day. And now, remember, I'm the accuser. Todd's the victim. Stan, her dad, is the facilitator or the person who's enabling this problem to go on. And Stan basically tells me that his wife doesn't even want me at their house because she doesn't like the way that I try to help them with Todd. And I said, that's fine. So I dropped my wife off, and I went to a friend's house that I'd known from college from Florida State, who lived in Hollywood, an hour and a half drive or so. And I spent the day with Steve, and I came back up and just picked Sharon up at the mall. Now, remember, they didn't want me in their house. Well, 5 years later, they call me up, and they say, we want you to help Todd. And I'm like, well, what is he doing now? Well, he's at the University of Central Florida, and we need you to try to talk to him. And I said, okay. I said, I really would have liked to have done that when he was 8 years old or 13 years old, but I'll be happy to talk to him since the last time I said, but I'm not coming to your house because I wasn't allowed to even come in your house last time. So they ended up basically coming over, and here he comes in with a mohawk with green hair, piercings all over his body, covered with tattoos, and just lying about everything. And so I told him he was extremely jaundiced, some type of hepatitis issue, I'm sure, from using dirty needles. And what ended up happening is he basically sat there and lied to me for 2 hours. And finally I told Stan, you really need to get him checked for drugs because he's using drugs now. He's probably doing some type of injectables, and his liver is being damaged and may have some type of hepatitis. And, of course, now I'm the accuser again. I get yelled at again, and the facilitator says, no, he would never do drugs. I'm like, okay. A few years later, Stan has to have surgery, and I ask where Todd is, and Todd says, he says, well, Todd went out and drank last night. He's like 25 years old. For the first time in his life, he went out and got drunk. He went out and had something to drink, and I thought, well, you don't really believe that, do you, Stan? And he had totaled Stan's car. Well, fast forward to about 3 years ago, I went to a funeral, and now Todd was about 32, 33 years old, and his uncle, Stan's brother, had died, and he looked okay. He really did look okay, but you could tell he'd lost now. He wasn't 300 pounds anymore. He was about 140 pounds, very thin. And he looked okay. So I thought, well, maybe he got past this. Well, a year ago, Stan called me back up, the father, and said, basically, can you loan me money? I've given all my money to Todd, which now was about $300,000 or $400,000, all of his retirement life savings. The guy's like 82 years old now, completely broke. And I said, well, Todd's just using it for drugs. And he says, my son doesn't use drugs. So I said, okay. And so I'll go to the bank if you want. We'll try to co-sign a loan with you guys if we have to, absolutely have to. I said, but what we have to do is I have to get a bunch of information from Todd, including blood tests. And if Todd's not willing to do that as far as getting tested for drugs, I'm not going to be willing to co-sign a loan. And so Todd would do nothing. Well, this Tuesday, fast forwarded up to this Tuesday. Anyhow, so Todd moves back in with Stan for the last 6 months. So this Tuesday, I get a phone call from Stan at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And I apologize for telling you guys all of this stuff right now because I know it's a lot of personal stuff. But I just want you to know why I'm coming to this point right now. This Tuesday, I ended up getting a phone call from Stan. And he said that Todd was found in a friend's bathroom in her apartment in Orlando, unresponsive. And he wanted to know if we could find out what was going on and if we could go up there, because we're about a 30-minute drive from Orlando. And I said, sure. And so we ended up going to Orlando. On the way up, we called the Orlando Sheriff's or the Orlando Police Department, and I would make sure that there were vehicles dispatched, and they said they already had vehicles on the scene. And I said, well, I need to inquire, is Todd okay? Is he on the way to the hospital? And they said, one of our deputies will call you right back. And as soon as they said that to me, I told Sharon, I said, there's a high probability that he's deceased. Because of what happened, because normally they tell you they're en route to a certain hospital. They don't tell you someone's going to call back unless there's been a death, in most cases. And sure enough, about 10 minutes later, the guy calls up and tells us that he was dead. Now, what's ironic about this is I told Stan when he called me at 1 o'clock that Todd probably had an overdose, and he's probably in trouble as far as he may be in cardiac arrest. And Stan started screaming at me again and told me that his son does not use drugs. Well, we get to this crime scene, the investigator's there, and Todd died of a heroin overdose and has been a longtime heroin user, according to the investigator, and had tracks all over his body. And he never even stopped using heroin, even when he's living with his father. Now, the irony of all of this is this. I told you it's a horrible story. That's why I'm a little disheveled tonight. The irony of this whole story is, even though his son was laying dead in a friend's bathroom from a heroin overdose, his father started yelling at me again because I was the accuser. He was the facilitator, and started screaming at me and telling me that my son doesn't use drugs. So we feel so horrible for this. The whole week's been just kind of disshuffled because of this. So I wanted to share it with you guys because a lot of you guys are my friends. And the sad part about all of this stuff is that I tried everything I could to intervene and to do some type of intervention. I told you guys a few months ago on the Hagman Show that my daughter had gone to a camp out in Montana. Well, my daughter was going sideways. She was 14 years old. She wasn't acting right. She was getting a really, really bad attitude. And we found a Christian ministry camp out there that actually took her, very, very inexpensive. And they took her out there, and they worked with Christian kids who have problems and who aren't adjusting properly. And so we went ahead and sent Alexis out there. because I did not want to be the person who facilitated Alexis having problems. So here's what I'm telling all of you tonight, and this is what the investigator told me when he was sitting with me in the car about Todd last Tuesday afternoon. He said the Afghan heroin has had a bumper crop, which I already knew, and that they are no longer cutting the heroin like they were, and that they're actually now, people are overdosing all over Orlando. And in fact, he said, this is what's called Heroin Highway, this road right here. He goes, I can look right down the street right now, and I've seen dozens of people that have been dead within 100 yards of here in the last year from heroin overdoses coming out of Afghanistan. In addition to that, he goes, what they're doing is with pot now, they're lacing the pot with heroin, they're lacing the pot with cocaine, they're lacing the pot with opiates. They're doing all kinds of crazy stuff to get the kids to intentionally addict these kids to opiates. And he says, that's what they're doing. He says, that's what's so dangerous about the pot thing right now. And that's one of the reasons that he was so opposed and I was so opposed to the legalization of marijuana. It's not that marijuana can't be used for medicinal reasons in some cases. And I believe in some cases it may have to be used, but just go to the state in which that's legal if that's possible. The problem is this is a gateway drug that causes a lot of these problems. And that's how Todd got started when he was 12, 13 years old on pot. And it gradually got worse and worse and worse until he started doing drugs and became a drug dealer in Vero Beach, which I found out later about that. And, of course, I told Stan about all of that. He didn't believe any of that. So the reality is this. You're either going to be the accuser, the facilitator, or the victim. So what you have to understand is if you are the facilitator, if you are the person that is enabling this, in fact, one of the first things the investigator asked me on Tuesday was, who enabled this behavior? Heroin addicts can't take care of themselves. Who enabled him to be able to do all of this? And I said, that would be his father, Stan, the colonel. And I said, the sad part about this is even though his son's dead now, he'll spin it in some other way to not accept responsibility for what's happened because he simply can't deal with this. And I talked to a man tonight at church. In fact, it was afternoon in church. And it was interesting because this guy actually does drug intervention and sets up clinics all over the world. And he said the biggest reason that these parents can't listen and can't intervene with these children when they see they're going sideways and they're having problems, even when they know they're openly using pot, even in their own homes, he said is that these children are basically the apples of the parents' eyes, and these parents, when they talk about these kids, they actually trigger dopamine, and they're almost like an addictive relationship with this child, and they're getting pleasure from this child. They're literally living their lives vicariously through this child, and they don't want to believe that this child is actually having health problems or mental problems or some type of addiction problems with what's going on with the drugs. So parents, please listen to me right now. I'm asking this from the bottom of my heart. I'm asking you, and God, if you could see me, I'd get on my knees right now and ask you. If you've got a child who's a drug user, if you've got a big child who's 12, 13, 14 years old who's using pot, do something. Get an intervention. Send him to the camp like I did Alexis, even though she wasn't using drugs. As far as we know, she was in Germany last year for 4 months for staying with our relatives trying to help her. That didn't work at all. That was a disaster. Now, whether she's ever used pot or not, I have absolutely no idea. I know it's not under my roof. Because, you know, we go through the rooms and inspect things on a regular basis. But the point is this. If you know your child is actively using pot, remember this. When the brain is being developed and you start using pot when you're 13 or 14 years old, that brain development stops. It basically causes arrested development. And that child remains that age, 12, 13, 14, if he continues to use the pot, if he doesn't get off of it almost immediately, for years and years and years, sometimes up to the 40s, sometimes they never get past it again. It's permanently changed. The brain development, the connections won't happen. So, you know, if you listening to me tonight, if you've got a child who's using marijuana, and if there's anything you can do to get him into some type of intervention program, I highly recommend that you do that. I've got a friend right now over in Orlando, and I've pleaded with him. He's got a 15-year-old son who's a doper, and all he does is smoke pot all the time. And a lot of you are thinking now, well, I smoked pot when I was young. I never had a problem with it. Hey, the stuff you were smoking when you were 20 or 30 or 40 years ago, 35 years ago, 50 years ago, wasn't laced with opiates. It wasn't laced with cocaine. It wasn't laced with all of this stuff. And the guy told me today, the guy who works in rehab, he said, the one thing that a heroin user always does is chases his first high because there's so much brain damage from these drugs when you start using them on a regular basis and the brain can't handle them and it quickly adapts to them that you never get the same heights that you had the very first time. Austin, anything you want to add to all of this?
Well, it was interesting you said that as far as 30, 40 years ago, cannabis usage, because they with the genetic modification and a lot of the stuff they figured out now scientifically, you're absolutely right. Even without the opiate additions, they found that most of the top grade cannabis back in the 60s and 70s was anywhere from 8 to 12% THC at best. They're finding some strands now that they've heavily modified anywhere in the low 30s. as far as pure THC, which is incredibly stronger than it used to be when a lot of people used to use it back in the 70s to, you know, say, hey, I smoked back then, nothing happened to me. So now you have, you know, 13, 14-year-olds that are using cannabis that we actually have no idea the long-term side effects of what that type of dosage of THC does to the brain long-term. So, yeah, it's definitely becoming very, very, very serious.
Well, the craziest thing is it's all part of the cultural deterioration of the United States. And, you know, it's part of the post-gender movement, the occult roots of the post-gender. I call this post-gender now because what's happening is we're moving into a country now in which, you know, we're trying to confuse sexual identity. We have a kid who lives right behind us, and my daughter was hanging in a tree talking to him today. I wanted to go play with him. This is just a couple hours ago. And I told Sharon, I said, she said, the kids that go to our church, they're like 14, 15 years old, and Savannah wants to go over there and play with them. And I said, absolutely not. Not until you go over and you meet the parents and you meet the other kids. Well, my wife drives around over to the back of the house and meets the parents, and they're really nice, and it's a foster family. They got foster kids there. And sure enough, the 13-year-old's really nice. But the 15-year-old comes walking out, and she's already beaten up the mother. And she's gender confused. She dresses like a dyke, and she basically is a lesbian. And she's super, super angry and likes to beat people up. And so what they're trying to do is they're trying to develop eunuchs. They're trying to make everybody androgynous. They're trying to develop hermaphrodites. What they want to do is this whole satanic movement, the occult roots of all of this, is all about making everybody unisex, because whatever God said is right, they want to make wrong. And so you need to make sure that you watch your children's friends and don't let them hang out with bad kids. A good friend of mine, Pastor David Crank, he's got Faith Church of St. Louis, got some great sermons online if you want to listen to him. He's a great friend. I met him the day my mom died, which is a long story, which I could tell you someday. But I've known him for 10 years, and I remember one time he was on my talk show when I was hosting the Power Hour, and he said to me, and I remember, Austin, you remember what he said, and so did Cliff and Chris. He said, show me your friends, and I'll show you your future. How true is that, Austin?
Yes, it's incredibly true. Like you were saying earlier, you know, with Todd, when you start hanging out with people, you know, that may be involved in things they shouldn't be involved in, when you're really young, it's very easy to get wrapped up in a lot of that behavior because, you know, you don't really know who you are, what your identity is. And as you were saying, how the confusion of the gender roles now is becoming such a serious issue. I mean, that is the primary goal of the globalists, the same way it is to get people hooked on stuff like heroin and cocaine. I mean, that's why there's, you know, even been all kinds of reports of the CIA bringing in, you know, the Afghan opiates. And they want to have everybody fixated on something else than what's really going on. That's how it's always been. They're behind the curtain making sure everybody's wrapped up in something, whether it be getting involved in drugs in a young age, whether they're getting involved with, you know, gender confusion, whatever it be. And you're absolutely right, though. When you look at somebody's friends, you'll see exactly who you're going to be and what you're going to turn into if you allow yourself to. So that's why it's really important to surround yourself with very intelligent, goal-driven people that are like-minded, that want the same thing you want, and hopefully that's positive.
That's right. I'm going to give you a real quick brief rundown on what happened in China and the opium wars they had back there in the 1800s with England. And what happened is Chiang Kai-shek, after World War II, was funding his entire army, his freestanding militia army, over 1 million people, and nobody could figure out how he was paying these troops. And our military top personnel went over there, and they asked him, they said, can you tell us how in the world you're funding your troops? And he says, easy. He goes, I sell heroin. Because, you know, they were part of that Cambodian triangle down there with Laos, Thailand, and Cambodia. They were using the areas which would grow heroin, and there were poppies, and they were getting everybody addicted to heroin, which was a major problem for China because of the opium wars they had back in the 1800s with England. And what ended up happening is the CIA started realizing they could do the same thing. And one of the things that people don't understand is that the Flying Tigers, one of the military air people in World War II that were flying over there in the Far East, their primary goal for flying those planes was to bring opium in and to start selling it and start making money on it. And what they realized is they could bring it in and they could give it to the Harlem jazz clubs because they decided that the black people weren't worth saving, which is absolutely awful. They'd already lost their souls. And if you watch The Godfather, Part 1, and you listen to what was going on in Part 1 with The Godfather, and you think about with the mob, and they were bringing them into New York, into the blacks, and they said that they even said in The Godfather Part One that they were that the opium and the heroin and all these things were coming in for the blacks, and that's the only people they were going to give it to. And then of course Marlon Brando says, well, I don't want to be involved in any of that. He got into the casino business instead. So that's what they were doing. They were bringing it into through the Harlem jazz clubs. And because they said, quote, they were already decadent and they couldn't be saved. They used Lucky Luciano to help plan the invasion of Italy, who was a major Italian mafia person. And he also one of the primary people of Operation Gladio. And that was allowed the CIA to be funded via the drugs that were being sold to the blacks through the mobs and to the mafia in the United States, primarily through New York. And then that's the same reason that we ended up getting into this giant war in Vietnam, because the Cambodian Triangle, they were trying to get rid of one of the reasons, they were trying to get rid of all of the opium growing in the triangle, and they didn't want to get rid of it. And so we ended up going into these countries basically because of drugs. And then when the thing wasn't going to work anymore in Vietnam, we shifted it all to Afghanistan. Then finally, Russia said, we don't want this stuff in here in Afghanistan. So they started going and trying to clean out of Afghanistan from 79 to 89, bankrupted the Soviet Union. And so now the main reason that we're in Afghanistan is to support the heroin trade coming into the United States through the CIA, through Andrews Air Force Base, coming in on C-130 cargo planes. You can listen to this whole thing. You can read the book Operation Gladio, when it goes into detail on all of this stuff. The nuttiest thing about all of this is that even in the Vietnam War, they had all the body bags, not all of them, but a lot of the body bags bringing the GIs over, they were bringing opium in or heroin in the body bags, you know, as with the cadavers, with the corpses of the GIs. I guess they really didn't care how many GIs they killed, because the more GIs they killed, the more opium and more heroin they could import. This whole thing is so corrupt, it's so awful, that, you know, when you start getting into the bottom of what's going on, it's that you realize that the number one commodity in the world is oil, the second one is natural gas, and the third commodity is heroin. And it's a $1 trillion enterprise just for North America alone. And it funds almost all of the black ops, and that much money being funneled through the banks, and that's just one of the reasons the Vatican banks got involved in it. And then they brought in Operation Condor to overthrow a bunch of the governments down in South America, and the current Pope was involved in having a whole bunch of his own people killed down there in Argentina through Operation Condor. And now he's the Pope. And of course, the Vatican Bank is still running it, and they get like a 15% cut off the top of all the money that they launder for the drugs. And this entire planet is being completely subjected to this massive influx now of heroin, and that's why so many people are dying. And the reason I've been hesitant to talk about this stuff all the time, I was thinking, well, you know, people know about it. I shouldn't have to talk about it. My wife's half brother died this week from it. He's dead. He's not coming back. And the sad part about it is that this thing's not getting any better, and I'm doing everything I possibly can on this show tonight to tell everybody what happened, even though this is extremely personal for me and my family, and that's why I've never mentioned any last names on this as far as my father-in-law, because this is awful. This whole thing is awful, but the reason that we're in Afghanistan, and we've talked to multiple troops, and Austin, you have friends that have come out from Afghanistan, they tell you the same thing. The reason we're over there is we're guarding the poppy fields, for heaven's sakes, because the Taliban had run all the opium out of Afghanistan, and it's a primary, one of the best climates in the world to grow it. What do you think, Austin?
Yeah, no, it's definitely a significant reason why we're over there. I mean, there's always a reason for starting a war, and the opium in Afghanistan is definitely completely it.
And again, always follow the money. It's all about the Sabbatean, Rothschild, Luciferian cabal that runs the planet, that basically runs and controls the money. And they see us all as animals, and they don't care if they kill every single one of us with a heroin overdose. They don't care as long as they make a profit. And it's sad, and you think, well, it shouldn't be that way. And, hey, I agree with you. You're absolutely right. It shouldn't be that way, but that just happens to be the way that it is. And if you guys want, I've got a really good video. In fact, it was a George Norris show on Coast to Coast. I've been on with George before, with this guy who wrote this thing, Operation Gladio. He wrote a really good book on it. And I attended one of his lectures a few weeks ago over at the River Church in Tampa. But I'll go ahead, we'll link that to the website, Austin, so people can look there and they can actually look at this entire information from the CIA, the Vatican, Gladio, and Condor, because he talks about all of that on the George Norris show on like a 600-station simulcast in the middle of the night. But it's on YouTube now, so you don't have to worry about waiting until the middle of the night. But let's change tracks real quick. The show tonight is brought to you by HealthMasters.com. we don't do a bunch of commercial interrupts because I don't like that. A lot of the shows right now that are, you know, giving you alternative news, gosh, every 7-8 minutes you get a 3 or 4 minute commercial spot. I'm not going to do that on this show. You know, Lord willing, I'll never have to do stuff like that because that's not my goal. My goal is to get information to you and to help you the best I possibly can. HealthMasters has got a really good website. We have a lot of great newsletters there. You can sign up for completely for free for our newsletter. And I want to thank so much of so many of you because so many of you have called up now on the this 1-800-726-1834, 1-800-726-1834, and you've asked us to sign you up or you've wanted to order products from us. And I thank you for ordering your vitamins and your supplements through us, read the articles that we've written on things. And I really appreciate that. I appreciate your support because without your support, we simply can't do a show like this. It's not possible. But let's go ahead and change subjects real quick. Let's talk about, this is by Michael Schneider. I also interviewed Michael on the Power Hour. I'll bring you back on this show here in a few weeks. And I love this article. It says, the global financial meltdown is coming. Clear signs of the great derivatives crisis has now begun. This is a couple of weeks ago he wrote this. And he said something happened in the middle of September and that the government had to do an $450 billion surge of treasury collateral into the overnight loan market. He said that what happened is the entire thing was starting to come apart again like it did in 2008. It took $405 billion influx of treasury collateral to stop it. And he says, many out there get upset when I compare derivative trading to gambling, and perhaps I should be more accurate to describe that most derivatives are a form of insurance. The big financial institutions assure us they've passed off most of the risk on these contracts to others, so there's no reason to, according to them. Well, that's complete nonsense. Look at Lehman Brothers. And he goes on to say, on a very basic, primitive level, derivatives is simply gambling. Derivatives are bets. This is not a metaphor, an analogy, or a generalization. Derivatives are bets, period. That's all they ever were. That's all they'll ever be. And when Bill Clinton signed the Banking Reform Act and got rid of the Glass-Steagall back in the 90s and allowed these big banks to come in now who own the majority of the New York Stock Exchange, these big banks do, as far as in the top five, the Fortune 500 corporation, they own big, huge margins of all of them because they printed all this money up and they just bought this, they gambled on it. He goes on to say, one very large financial institution that appears to be in serious trouble with these financial weapons of mass destruction is Glencore. At one time, Glencore was considered to be the 10th largest company on the entire planet. But it now appears becoming a part of the seams, and a great deal of the trouble seems to be tied to derivatives. Remember, we have $1.4 quadrillion, that's $1,400 trillion in $1,400 trillion in derivatives in 2008, and they never haven't stopped this. They haven't stopped doing this. So we have no idea. It's probably closer to $2.5 quadrillion now in derivatives, and that's why they want to get rid of money that's based on gold or silver, and they want to go to straight digital currency where they don't have to print it anymore. That way it's much more easily to manipulate the money and the money supply. The blame on the general stock market plunge was cast on Fed's inability to raise interest rates. However, that seems to be nothing more than a clever cover story, more obfuscation for something much more catastrophic, which began to develop out of sight of the general liquidity functions of the global banking system. Back in 2008, Lehman Brothers was not perfectly fine one day and then suddenly collapsed the next. There were problems brewing under the surface well in advance. Well, the same thing is happening now at banking giants such as Deutsche Bank and at the commodity trading firms such as Glencore, the Noble Group, and of course a lot smaller fish are starting to float as well. And what's the thing about Deutsche Bank was it's some insane number. It's hundreds of trillions of dollars in derivatives they have. And so Deutsche Bank's in big, big trouble. And if Deutsche Bank goes down, the entire euro is going to go down. And Ben Bernanke, in all of his infinite wisdom, said this the other day. He goes, I'm going to quote you this. You got to love this one. Former Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke doesn't see any bubbles forming in global markets right now. But he doesn't think you should take his word for it. And even if you did, that isn't the right question to ask anyway. Here's what he said, quote, speaking at a Wall Street Journal event Wednesday morning, Bernanke said, quote, I don't see any obvious major mispricings. Nothing that looks like the housing bubble sector before the crisis. But you shouldn't trust me. You know, I mean,
don't worry,
are you joking me? Of course we don't trust him. But now he's telling us not to trust him. That goes back along with that white magic nonsense that they do, these Luciferians. They've got to tell you what they're going to do to you before they do it to you so it's not the karma they got to pay on the other side. Austin, what do you think about Bernanke saying that we shouldn't trust him, buddy?
Well, he's dead on with that. I mean, absolutely. It's funny too, because I got an article here about how much longer can our unaffordable housing prices last. It ties in a lot what you were saying, where basically the housing market is continuing to expand again, like we've seen. And in a normal cycle of supply and demand, new, more affordable houses would be built, and prices would decline, becoming down to a reasonable level. It says, but that isn't happening in the hot real estate market in the U.S. What's happening is rental housing is being built to profit from rising rent, and luxury housing is being built to meet the demand from wealthy overseas buyers. And it said between April 2013 and April 2014, Chinese nationals purchased more than $221 billion worth of real estate in the United States. And so what essentially is happening is they are creating this artificial inflation on the housing market, because they're coming in and buying these houses for ridiculous amounts of money with all their gold and everything else they have in China. And it's making the housing market look like it's getting really, really strong again. But it's just another facade. We all know that, like we've already seen. Like you just said with Bernanke, don't trust him. We know the housing market is just going to tank back out again as soon as it has another peak, which it's about to hit again.
Well, what China also has is they're not really, you know, putting any gold into this deal. You know, they have a boatload of gold over there. They're selling their treasuries and their T-bills, their bonds, their U.S.
Right.
treasury bills. And they're rife with cash now, because they're selling literally hundreds of billions of these treasury bills. They've got to do something with the money, so they just take the money and pump it back into our sector, which is inflating our housing. Let me give you some information real quick. This is interesting. This is from Pam Martin, and it's called what's the name of it? It's called I want to do this. It's called Wall Street on Parade. It's a really good email. I get it every single day, and it's saying that China imports have plunged 17.7% over the year in September. In September, on a straight decline. Make no mistake about it. Just as Lehman Brothers was set up to take the fall for triggering in 2008, China is being groomed as the new scapegoat for the coming crisis. But China's economic slump is only a symptom, not the disease. In the reality, the dark gathering of economic storm clouds are merely the second leg of the 2008 financial collapse set in motion on, listen to this, November the 12th, 1999, when Bill Clinton, surrounded by his Wall Street sickos, signed Gramm-Leach-Billy Act, also known as the Financial Services Modernization Act, which repealed Glass-Steagall, which prevented the gambling of assets on stocks. Of 1933, legislation which had kept our financial system more stable for 66 years. A short 9 years later, the U.S. financial system collapsed in the greatest upheaval since the Great Depression. In the meantime, it might be good idea to reflect on the underlying concerns of the stock market. On September the 24th, Caterpillar took a machete to its prior earnings outlook for 2015 and said it will cut its headcount by as many as 10,000 jobs through 2018. These big multinational job cut announcements have been coming since last December. American Express 4,000, Coca-Cola 1,600, IBM 1,800, with the rumors up to much, much higher. Baker & Hughes 7,000, Schulenberger 9,000, U.S. Steel close to 1,000. It's not just China that's the problem. In its second quarter earnings conference, this is what Caterpillar had to say. We'll start with construction industries, which are down 18% and down in all regions. Latin America was the most significant decline, down 47%, and that was mostly a result of weak demand in general, in particular in Brazil. And also absent of a large order that we had for the Brazilian government last year. Asia Pacific was down 30%, with much of that decline in China and Japan. And it goes on, and it goes in earlier this year, Steve Ricciuto, chief U.S. economist at Mizuho Securities, said, I keep hearing over and over again in the financial press about this acceleration in economic growth. This isn't happening. Last month, we had a horrible retail sales number. We had a horrible durable goods number. We're likely to have a very disappointing retail sales number coming forward. This month, we've had a strong payroll number. We say everything's great. It's not great. It's running where it's been. It's been the same for the past 5 years. There is no improvement in the economy. And I think that pretty much sums it up. We are basically stagnant right now. We're in this mess that Japan's been in for the past 20 years, and now we're in it. And the only thing we're doing is propping up a bunch of zombie banks that are betting on all their money they have on derivatives and on buying stocks in the New York Stock Exchange. Austin, what do you think?
Yeah, you're dead on with that one. There was one thing that I wanted to discuss, because I get a lot of phone calls on this quite regularly. I found another article on it. I know we've touched on it before. The article read, "The Origins of Your Health Problems Might Actually Be in Your Mouth," by John Thomas, and it goes on to talk about the amalgam fillings or the mercury fillings. And one of the statements in here says the fillings, these fillings contain up to 50% mercury, 50%, half of the filling in your tooth is mercury, and that mercury is the most toxic, non-radioactive substance on Earth. Repeat that if somebody didn't understand that. Mercury is the most toxic, non-radioactive substance on Earth. So why in the world are they putting it in our teeth? And it just goes on and boggles my mind how they're continuing to do this. The dental fillings have had serious health risk, and they can show up in all types of life-threatening diseases. And the evidence has continued to grow since the 70s, saying that these safe fillings should be banned in the United States, as they have been done in other countries, yet American dentists keep using them. The late Dr. Hal Huggins indicated that 200 diseases are associated with mercury exposure. And Dr. Boyd Haley's research showed a definitive relationship between mercury exposure and the development of Alzheimer's, and also the fact that the mercury vapor is constantly being released from silver mercury and is not disclosed by dentists to patients, and that the ADA demands that all dentists speak the same facts to their patients. And the message is simple, that mercury is not toxic or harmful in amalgam fillings. In fact, any dentist who suggests to a patient that mercury is toxic is setting himself up for revocation of his dental license. It is considered unethical by the ADA to suggest that amalgam fillings are harmful in any way. And I talk to people all the time. They ask me about getting their fillings removed. And, I mean, of course, you can use ceramic and composite options now, but it just boggles my mind that they're still using mercury fillings. And I know you've seen a lot of this, Dad.
Well, you know, the craziest thing, Austin, is this. You're 27 years old. You've got a master's degree from Southeastern University in business. You're brilliant. You've never been immunized, except for one time we gave you a tetanus shot that we were forced to do, but we did a non-thimerosal when we had no mercury in it. And you got deathly ill from that for days after you had one tetanus shot. And what's interesting, I'm not saying never use a tetanus shot, but make sure you get, if you're going to take a tetanus shot, get one that doesn't have any aluminum or mercury in it. That's very, very important. The craziest thing about all of this is you've never, ever had fluoride. You've never, ever had any problems with your teeth. How many cavities have you had, Austin, in 27 years, and how many fillings do you have?
Zero to this day, and I've never used fluoride toothpaste, used fluoridated water, or had fluoridation treatment done at the dentist, and I've had zero cavities, and I have zero fillings, and anybody that doesn't believe me can take a look at my teeth if you ever run into me in person. I'll be happy to show you.
You're pretty big, Austin. I think you'd probably, people wouldn't want to say, right, open your mouth, I won't check your teeth out.
You better make sure you talk to me first.
Yeah, don't try to open his mouth. It'll go badly for you, I promise. But the thing about it is that I wanted to share that with you, because the problem with this is the thimerosal that's been put in immunizations, and the thimerosal that's still being used as a sterile that's supposed to be removed from immunizations, that's still trace amounts, which is huge amounts of thimerosal or mercury in immunizations, and also the aluminum. And now, right now in the United States, they're saying that women should be vaccinated against pertussis when they're pregnant. When they're pregnant! And it's never been tested. Vaccine safety has not been tested for growing fetuses, period, potentially risking the lives of millions of unborn babies. And they see, the globalists, the greed. See, I don't think I can make you understand how these Luciferians think, okay, these boys who do all of this. They don't think that you're a human being. They think that they're the only human beings, and they've got some kind of, you know, Nephilim DNA in them or whatever they want to have. They don't think that you're anything more than a bed of red ants in the backyard or a snake that crawled in by accident. They don't think you're anything. They would just soon take you and stomp you or spray you with Raid like they would a red ant bed and wipe out a million people in Iraq. They don't care. I remember that Secretary of State one time, I think it was Madeleine Albright, said that when she was questioned that 500,000 babies were killed in the invasion of Iraq, she said, well, I feel that was worth the effort. I feel that was okay. I mean, what the H-E double sticks is wrong with her? All these children dying and 500,000 and that was okay? That whole thing was about oil. It's because Saddam Hussein wanted to start trading directly with Russia and other countries with oil and not going through the petrodollar. That's why he was taken out. That's why Gaddafi was taken out. These people are so greedy, they consider human beings to be such refuse, they don't care about any of us. We're commodities to be bought and sold as if we're still in the slave business. And the nuttiest part about all of this, these same Rothschilds people that are doing all of this, they were some of the biggest slavers back in the 1700s and 1800s. People don't understand this. They were like the primary port of the slave trade. And they still see us as that. They don't see us as humans whatsoever. And it's all part of this Luciferian agenda. And you say, well, Ted, that sounds really weird when you talk like that. Well, yeah, it is really weird. Quite frankly, I thought it was really weird the first time I read it, and I thought the guy who was saying it was nuts. But the whole thing always leads back to Satanism, and then that's why. Because they don't have the same moral fiber that you have and I have, that Austin has and my wife has, that any of us have. They see Todd as a customer, the guy who died of the heroin overdose this week. Now they're upset they've lost a customer. They got to try to get more and more people addicted. They're not upset that they gave children drugs and got them addicted at 13 or 14 years of age. They don't care. It's all part of their fiduciary responsibility. Remember that one, that crazy cartoon one time, Austin, we were watching it. I forgot what it was. It was that nutty cartoon, and the globalists were sitting there, and they were in a spaceship looking at Earth, and they were burning cigars with $100 bills, and they said, well, the Earth's not putting out enough money, now we're going to go ahead and destroy the planet. Remember that? It was South Park, wasn't it?
It was South Park, yes.
Yeah, don't get me wrong.
Not that I recommend that show, but it was something that I remember we saw, yeah, on YouTube.
But we saw it on YouTube, and I thought to myself, this is nuts, but they're telling the truth.
It really was. I mean, it couldn't have been any clearer.
And I mean, I don't want to run around. I've seen like two South Park episodes my whole life. And that was because I think Austin pointed it out to me back when he was watching it back in college. But the craziest thing about this is that they were telling the truth with that. The same thing was true with, they did a big spoof on Britney Spears one time, and that was horrible. But they were showing basically she had just turned into this mindless zombie because of all the stuff they'd been giving her. And the nuttiest thing about all of this is that if we don't stand in the aggregate against what the globalists are doing, if we don't stand for what's right, what the Word of God says, the Bible, the Torah, the New Testament, if we don't stand for that, and I'm not talking about Talmudism. I'm not talking about the Babylonian Talmud. That thing is messed up, along with the Scofield Bible. That thing's messed up. And I talked today to I talked to an old friend today we hadn't seen in church for many, many years. And it was interesting because we started talking about the Scofield Bible. We talked about that last week. The Scofield Bible, the reference Bible, the interpretive Bible, what tells you it has all these notes in it, those are just that guy's opinion. And that guy's been dead now since the early 1900s, and they've come out with like six or seven different versions of the Scofield Bible and updates, and he never even wrote any of the new stuff in there. And this is all through the University Press of Oxford, which is the big Illuminati breeding ground over in England, and it's all made for mind manipulation and to do certain triggers on you and make you believe certain ways. And they don't care if it takes 1 year or 10 years or 100 years. They don't care. They started this Federal Reserve nonsense here in 1913 with that blithering idiot Woodrow Wilson, and now we've been stuck with this mess for the past 100 years. It's all about manipulation. That's all they care about. You got any more stories there, Austin?
Let me see here. Yeah, the one quick one that I would touch on. We've spoken a little bit last week on the gun control and how Obama was discussing executive action to impose new background checks on gun buyers. And it was actually an article done in 2007 by Harvard Research shows that correlations that nations with the strictest gun control tend to have much higher murder rates than nations that allow guns. But what it showed is a lot of times when you see these polls and all these just erroneous studies that they put on TV to try and confuse everybody, is they always say, well, America has the most gun crimes. Well, the size of the population, that is partially true, but what they don't say is that when the UK banned firearms back in the 90s, that yes, the murder rate from firearms, directly from firearms, did drop down significantly, but the violent crime went up significantly from baseball bats, knives, chains, brass knuckles. All that continued to skyrocket, and it's still very high over there. And so what most people have to understand is when you see a lot of this just propaganda on TV, when they talk about, you know, common sense gun laws or reasonable background checks, this is all small steps they're trying to confuse the populace with so they can slowly bring in firearm confiscation. We're the only country in the world that pretty much has full access to military-grade small arms weapons. And that is why we have never been invaded on this soil, and that is why there's been a difficult time for the United States government to try and turn everybody into thinking they need to give up their guns voluntarily through all these mass shootings, whether they're mind control, MK Ultra. Like I said, it's all a lot of it's speculation, but there's definitely something significant going on with the gun control and the push to push it even further. So that's one thing I just want to add in.
You know what's so crazy about that, Austin? If you take out the places like Detroit and Chicago and these gun control hotspots where they don't talk about guns, and in Washington, D.C., you get those statistics out of the United States statistics, we dropped to like the 150th nation on the planet as far as gun violence.
Yeah.
I mean, and these are the places where they've already taken the guns away because only the criminals have the guns. Because I got a news flash for everybody who's listening to the show tonight, and I know with my audience, it probably all they already know this anyhow. But the criminals don't turn the guns in.
No.
So now what happens when they come in to do a home invasion on a law-abiding citizen, they know that you may have a baseball bat there, but there's not much of a chance with you with a baseball bat when somebody comes walking in with a .45. And see, that's the nuttiest thing about all of it. If we get rid of these hotbed spots that have all these gun crimes like Chicago and Detroit and Washington, D.C., we drop down like 150 on the list as far as countries. That means we have basically no gun crimes.
Yeah.
In the one city, I forgot which one it is.
It's Plano, Texas.
Well, yes. And it has like the highest amount of guns, and they have like zero murder rate.
Yeah, their murder rate was 0.1, I think, per 100,000 people.
Yeah, and because
it was nothing. And what's funny is people always come up with these, oh, you know, this seems to be a gun-free zone. Dude, that's just a sit-and-duck gun zone is what that is. That just means you're sitting there waiting to get shot. Banks are pretty much widely known. You're not allowed to bring a firearm into a bank. Does anybody that's planning on robbing a bank go, oh, man, we shouldn't rob a bank because they say we're not allowed to have firearms in there? Oh, that's a good idea. We shouldn't rob a bank. No. Anybody that has any type of, you know, malintent to harm another human being, they don't care if it's a gun-free zone. They love gun-free zones because they can do whatever they want without fear of somebody returning fire on them.
Well, it has happened in Aurora, Colorado a few years ago. We basically have a kid who runs in, if you want to believe the story, which I don't believe he even did the shooting. I think a whole team went in there and did that. And they did it because they knew that if you try that in Polk County where we live, you walk into a movie theater and try to shoot somebody, I can tell you what's going to happen. 25 people are going to stand up and shoot you. That's just what's going to happen.
Yeah,
because,
real quick.
Because everybody, when we live in a pretty rural area, and pretty much everybody we know has a concealed weapons permit, including me, Austin, my wife, Sharon's mom. I mean, Austin's wife, we all carry guns with us everywhere we go. And you think, well, what are you scared of? Well, that's the point. We're not scared of anything. I'm not going to get carjacked or abducted. It's not going to happen. And see, that's the thing that people need to realize. That's why we take gun training safety classes all the time. But again, we're almost out of time again, so I don't want to run too much on this. But please, support us at Health Masters, a really good health program for you. Make sure you take potassium iodide every day, especially from the Fukushima that's coming from the radiation coming from Fukushima, 13.5 milligrams. Take at least 5,000 IUs of vitamin D3 now that we're going into flu season every single day. Make sure it's combined with vitamin K2, because without K2, the D3 can cause arterial calcification. In addition to vitamin C, a good multiple vitamin, and vitamin E, if you're on that, and a good B-complex. If you're taking that and a cod liver oil product, you'll be phenomenal as far as how you feel and how much energy that you have on a regular basis. Let me give you a couple more statistics real quick. This is about STDs and about what's going on in the United States. We'll finish this up in the next week here when we start doing it. Oh, by the way, we'll be live again on Tuesday from 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock on Global Star, and live again on Thursday from 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock on Global Star. It's 2 o'clock. Is it 2 o'clock?
No, three to four.
3 to 4. I'm sorry. It's 3 to 4 on Global Star. On Tuesday and Thursday, and then the following week we'll be live every week, every day. We'll have no more tape shows. We'll be live every single day, 6 days a week, Sunday night all the way through Saturday night, 1 hour a day to give you updates. Plus, I'll be bringing a whole bunch of guests on, including Sheila Zelewinski this Thursday. I'll be bringing Dave Hodges back on. Oh, by the way, stay tuned right now if you're listening to Dave Hodges' show. It's coming up next. Here's some more. Let me give some statistics. Approximately one-third of the entire population of the United States, 110 million people, has an STD, a sexually transmitted disease. Every year, there are 20 million new STDs in America. That's because we're teaching the kids how to have sex in kindergarten, by the way. It costs approximately $16 billion a year to treat sexually transmitted diseases. 24% of all U.S. teens have STDs, and they say they still have unprotected sex. In Chicago, public school kindergarten teachers are now required to set aside 30 minutes a month for sex education to kindergartens, to five-year-olds. No wonder we have so many people having sex at 7, 8, 10, 12 years old. I mean, I didn't know what sex was until I was 10 or 12. The United States has the highest teen pregnancy rate in the entire industrial world. At this point, one of every 14 girls in the U.S. has at least one sexually transmitted disease. An astounding 30% of all internet traffic now goes to adult websites. The average high school boy spends 2 hours on adult websites every single week. I think it's higher than that. It's been estimated that 89% of all porn is produced in the United States by this Rothschild, Khazarian, Luciferian mafia. The synagogue of Satan is the one who's doing it. The marriage rate in the United States has fallen to an all-time low. Right now, we are sitting at a yearly rate of 6.8 marriages per 1,000 people. We have the highest divorce rate in the world by a high margin. For women under the age of 30 in the United States, more than half of all babies are being born out of wedlock. In a massacre that is almost unbelievable, 60 million of babies have been slaughtered in this country since 1973. The number of American babies killed by abortion each year is roughly equal to the number of U.S. military deaths that have occurred in all of the wars that the United States has ever been involved in combined. Is that nuts, Austin?
Every year.
All of the wars ever fought in the United States is how many babies we kill every year through abortion. I don't even know what to say about that.
Sad, man.
I know you've got a pregnant wife right now, and I mean, we're Christians, and we don't even consider any of this stuff to be okay. But it's absolutely nuts. In fact, it was funny, the pastor today has just gotten back from South Africa, and Johannesburg is one of the highest sex crime areas in the whole world, and he had a good friend of his who last year was targeted to be organ harvested, and they actually had him set up and had already sold his organs, and the mob there in Johannesburg, which don't go to Johannesburg, had already decided how they were going to kill him. They were going to do it on an airplane and harvest all of his organs, and they had already been sold and had contracts in Europe to have his organs taken out. And finally, one of the guys in security at the airport said, you're so-and-so's friend, he's a friend of mine, I got to tell you this, they're fixing to abduct you and sell your body parts. See, this is the world we live in. This is what's happened. They poison you with the GMO foods. They poison you with the drugs. Your heart, your liver, your kidneys fail. And then they take other people who they consider just to be animals anyhow, and they remove their body parts to give them back to you because you've also got poisoned organs. I mean, the whole thing's nuts, Austin. The whole thing's nuts.
Yeah. It's pretty
but
bizarre.
But anyhow, thank you for joining us. God bless you all. May God's grace shine upon you. May He be merciful to you. May He grant you peace. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for supporting healthmasters.com. We're looking forward to talking to you again. We'll be live again on Tuesday. Thank you so much for joining in with us.